Welcome back to Brass Tacks, and we are ready to take Dr. Gaze's input on the questions I raised with her about the Barbadian family, how COVID might have been impacting on the function of that very important social institution. Dr. Degas?
Yes, Mr. Marie. It ties in with what Dr. Ford has been saying about family and the rise in domestic violence and so on. What we are seeing with the onset of COVID and the pandemic and so on is a disruption of all the institutions in society. So not just the family, but even religion and all the major education, major institutions. Regarding the family, I can't categorically speak with certainty because obviously I don't have figures and so on, but we are hearing about a rise in domestic violence, a rise in conflict within families, and notice that during the pandemic, between about last March and the end of the year, based on media reports, have we heard about at least three teenagers committing suicide? I might be wrong about that, but I do recall at least two of them committing suicide. Due to the fact that once before the pandemic and all the social distancing and so on, young people could go out, hang with their friends, you know, guys usually would go on the block and so on, but then you're forced to stay inside, and in conflictual situations, conflict gets worse, right? So there is that disruption to family, but especially regarding things like conflict between family members. Remember that traditionally in Barbados, Barbadian society has been one that has focused a lot on the parent being the dominant figure, and children must be seen and not heard and so on. You know, each family differs, but in many families that may still be so. And in cases where people are home all day long with their children and grandparents, and depending on the family type, parents get frustrated, they start to accuse the children of being rude and so on and so forth. Children have to be entertained, and that creates problems and so on. Regarding your other question, yes, I've seen, because I work with young people, I have seen a rise in things that Dr. Ford spoke about, rising anxiety levels of students reporting that they are not coping, that things have just unraveled for them, right? Where before, even something as simple as coming to school physically was an outlet. It was a way to get out of a conflictual family situation. When you don't have to physically leave home and you are home all day long, things get worse. So students, a lot of them, their mental health issues are coming to the fore. They are reporting more conflict with family members. And we've had cases where students have just withdrawn from the college and so on and so forth. What has happened too, it throws the other institutions into an adjustment mode. So the institution of education now is performing some of the functions of the family. So you have at the college, and I must commend all the staff members of the community college, from the ancillary staff, the principal, all the lecturers, everyone. We've been thrown into a situation where we are helping students to cope with the pandemic, and not just related to their schooling, not just related to the knowledge that we are imparting, but helping them to deal with things like anxiety and family conflict, family issues and that type of thing. Right. So it has definitely thrown everything out of whack.
Thank you. But would you say that, I know, like you said, we have to adapt. Man is a great gregarious animal. He likes to interact with his fellow human being. He likes to be sociable, et cetera. So then when people are deprived of that, that makes a whole difference to their psyche and their personality. But do you think that in the same way that we have had numerous or innumerable hints being given on air, on radio, in the media, coaching the society through how to deal with the economic fall off of COVID, how to deal with the health, sanitizing, wear your mask, etc., that maybe it would have helped if we had thought had been given, and there was a manifesto, there was similar advice given to general public to how to cope socially with these disruptions and these uncertainties and these worrisome developments. Do you think that more could have been done in that respect?
I don't think that anything was lacking in terms of preparing people for the social distancing and the height, you know, trying to maintain better hygiene and so on. I think enough has been done in that regard. I do think that. But we are dealing with human beings, and as you said, we are social animals. And therefore, the issue that you may get, what the society may get, or state agencies may get, is that issue of forced social distancing. And after a while, despite state directives, people, because they're human beings, they will get extremely tired of not having that physical interaction, right? So you may get a fall off in people not wanting to quote unquote obey because of the fact that we are social animals. And that's the whole paradox about this pandemic as it relates to technology. Now, I sometimes wonder what might have happened if the pandemic had occurred in the 1980s, you know, when we didn't have all this technology at our fingertips. Would we have fared better or worse, right? Because technology has facilitated a type of normality, as normal as we can make it. We have tried to continue to educate our children. We have tried to, churches have you know, adjusted and holding their services online and doing Zoom sessions. You have grannies doing Zoom sessions with church and everything now, right? But there's a paradox. On the one hand, we feel separated by the lack of physical face-to-face interaction. On the other, technology is making us feel connected. We're very connected, overly connected to some extent, because the technology, all this smartphones and so on, they connect us immediately with people. But to me, it's paradoxical in a way. And I wonder, I'm not speaking from a scientific or educated perspective, but I sometimes wonder if that is what is messing with our minds, especially some of the young people. We crave physical face-to-face interaction and hanging out and laughing and talking with our friends. But at the same time, we are connected, but just in cyberspace, right? So I sometimes wonder about if, you know, the paradoxical nature of that type of thing.
Dr. Diggett, there's a book called Understanding Media, written by a man called Marshall McLuhan, who coined the phrase, the global village.
Right.
And he talks about technology and its of various kinds, and the media in general. Media, not only communications media, but also media in terms of even the motor car or the telephone, it's an impact on society. So his thesis is that, and this goes back to the early 60s, is that technology not only changes your aspects, but the society itself impacts on the society, and therefore there are changes in ways which are not immediately perceptible. And I'm wondering whether therefore is we run the danger of, like you said, some of this behavior is being normalized. What happens after COVID? It's a long ongoing issue. That new norms, as they like to say, these days, might become permanent, and then may have a different manifestation, different way of life.
Yes, Mr. Murray. Yeah. I do agree with you. I feel that after COVID, whenever that will be, a lot of the behaviors and social patterns and values and so on that are setting into place now will probably become the new norm. And we will have, because remember that the nature of culture is such that it continues to change. Change is continuous. Culture is constantly changing, and therefore, yeah, we will have a cultural change. We are having a cultural change, and the new norm will not be what it was 2 years ago, most likely not. It's possible that people might prefer to continue to do church online or teach online, and people, because what's happening nowadays, we constantly ask ourselves, in anytime we have to have a meeting or we have to have a class or we have to shop, basic everyday activities, I think that many of us ask ourselves a question, is there any good reason to do this in person? Can I do it online? Right? And that may become the norm where we prefer to do things online. And we're going to, yeah, for sure, I feel that not just locally, but globally, we're creating whole new cultures and new norms and so on.
Thank you, Dr. Degge. Dr. Ford, I'd like to come back to you and use Dr. Degge's presentation as a segue into the whole coping mechanisms. I spoke about the power need for insights given to be able to cope socially. What about individually and the adjustment to even the lack of communication? Are there particular methodologies, particular techniques that persons might be able to bear in mind and put into practice as they themselves, like the human being, adapt, adjust, because we all want to survive, like the human being instinctively drives for? How do you think that we need to approach that area of individual survival and the coping mechanism that will make adjustment more tolerable and easier to manage?
Well, look, Mr. Murray, it's simple. Our own research, Jules et al. On university campus here, showed that older workers and women were readily accepting the protocols and the practices. They were following it and they were willing to do what was needed. Some of the younger workers felt it like a bother. Oh, it ain't here yet. It ain't here yet. And they don't want to do the practices. But first and foremost, individually, you have to be responsible for you. Social distance, sanitize your hands, wear your mask. Nobody should have to mandate that.
What about in your head, in your mind, in your being?
Yeah, okay. We come into that. We were given this whole idea that tourists can come, Barbados is safe. But Barbados is only as safe as we, the Barbadians, make it. And I'm calling myself a Barbadian in this context, and my friends are going to be heckling me from now till forever. But we have to be mindful that if we are safeguarding ourselves, by extension, we are safeguarding others. And that mindset is very difficult to change. We feel, as I said earlier, we are feeling that you are prohibiting us from doing what we have a right to do. We all have a right. So if I choose to safeguard myself, you also should choose to safeguard yourself. But if you don't choose to, wear your mask outside so that you don't transmit to anybody else. Now that mindset change is going to take a while until you don't feel it. One, in your purse. Two, in your own immediate family. I don't think some people are going to get the message. But by and large, I think we here in Barbados have begun to take the message. And I hope I'm right.
Don't you think that in the same way we have a responsibility to protect ourselves and others, that others, including tourists, coming to Barbados, have a response to protect themselves and protect us too, and that the standards have to be equally applied?
Yes. And I think the responsibility is on our ministries, our respective ministries here, to enforce, not only to say, and I will use a word couched right now, aid and abet them to do what they want. They must be told clearly what is expected of you when you come to Barbados. And if you don't get a test in 72 hours, go to Australia. You have to wait 14 days, whether you like it or not. And you have to pay your own way. So we have to be mindful what we are doing in this country. We have to be very, very careful. All tourists must be on the same level as all Barbadians and treated thus. Be mindful of our rules and our guidelines for going forward.
But how do you mesh that? I understand that. I support that. I appreciate that. But how do you mesh that then with the average tourist? You know, countries and cultures have certain stereotypes and expectations of each other's behaviors. Many of them think Barbados has a fantasy land, a playground, a place where they can let their hair down, where they don't have to operate by any standards, that they live their life, live out their fantasy for rum, for music, for drink, the beach, for sex, whatever. And therefore, to do others would be to think that you are depriving them of their fantasy, of their dreams, of their expectation, of their imaginations.
Okay, so we deprive them. Let them go to one of the other fantasy islands then. But we are not alone in this whole tourism thing, you know. What about New Zealand? What about Hawaii? What about the islands that are supposed to be the same fantasy island? There's nothing wrong in coming here to outlive your fantasy. But the tourists who are traveling now are the tourists who can afford to travel in a shutdown. So we don't have to pussyfoot around what laws and what provisions we put in place. We have to say, come, we will offer you the fantasy, but it will cost you. And every human being should understand that. Because I had a friend who went to her dad in Jamaica. She's in quarantine now. She's paying all that she has to pay. My own children came home for Christmas. We paid what we had to pay. I am not going to query that, but I'm saying tourists can still expect to come here and get the Fantasy Island vacation, but it's going to cost them. The pandemic is going to cost all of us in the long run. If we just look at education, change in education is going to cost billions of dollars. And education was unequal before, and it will continue to be unequal because of the technology. I just want to make a point off of what Dr. Degia said. She said about the technology, and it's here, and it's here. A research coming out of the UK and one coming out of Jamaica suggests that 48% of persons using technology get fatigued. They get tired. People who are already depressed, people who are already anxious to see their family, when they go online and see the activity, the funerals especially, it makes them worse. So we have to be careful about how we are pushing. Yes, the technology is good, but I think after COVID, God willing, we need to get back together and socialize. We need to go back to meetings, not the short pants meeting on the Zoom. We have to get back and become each other's keeper and become each other's friends. Social distancing, we don't want it to become social isolation. It's very near to that stage right now.
What will be the impact of such social distance, of such social isolation on an individual, your self-esteem, your relation to your hierarchy of needs? How do you stand in the society? What kind of impact would that have on the individual if that were to be dragged on for longer?
Let's be realistic. There has always been in the Caribbean a great degree of social isolation of older people, persons not at work. As I said before, people are suffering with or encountering domestic violence, abused and abandoned and neglected children. However, the pandemic has made it worse. How do we get out of it? How do we get out of it? The churches have a role to play. Many churches have their outreach program, my own church being one of those. We find that even though schools are closed, we still have to make sure those children get the breakfast that we would give them when they were in school. How do you do that? More NGOs will have to take charge. Governments cannot do everything. More NGOs will have to come forward, as we saw the Barbadian NGOs doing in the early days of the pandemic. The point is that has to continue, reaching out to the more vulnerable in society. Food hampers is one way. But you know, people don't only have to eat. They also have to socialize. We still are blessed in this country where we have free landline telephone calls. Pick up your phone, go through the phone book, just call somebody. If they tell you, I don't want to talk to you now, that's fine. But still talk to somebody. You know, the psyche is going to be important for us to keep it well now during the pandemic, so that after the pandemic, we still have a population of people who are feeling as part of a community. Dr. Degia could tell us more about this, how important community and community socialization is in a pandemic like this.
Before we go to Dr. Degia, would it be that You said you are, you made it clear you're a devout Catholic. Do you find that religion, that people are going back to the principles of religion, to your faith, or whatever that might be, to give you solace and comfort and some sense of security about a settlement about the present existence and future, possible future life?
Right. Yes, as a devout Roman Catholic, my own faith is based on service to others and forgiveness. I believe that all churches, whether Roman Catholic, Anglican, Evangelical, or what have you, have to go back to the Bible. We have all strayed too far from the Bible. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and love your neighbor as yourself. Many of us have not been doing that. We have to go back to those two central points in any religion. Forget naming Roman Catholic, Anglican, Evangelical, or what, Pentecostal, or whatever you have, right? Hindu, Muslim. Treat each man as you would like yourself to be treated. See the next man as a mirror image of you, as a mirror image of Christ. And that's my preaching for this Sunday.
Yes, thank you. I think we can get ready for a call. And but before we do, let's take a break and we come right back to Brass Tacks. We go to the phones and then Nicola. Thank you.
Williams Metals, choose us for your building needs at Williams Metals. We got what you need. We are the leaders in building materials. We offer lumber, cement, concrete, copper, aluminium, and all type of metals. For construction, get galvanized sheets, welding and plumbing products for sure. You can find that and so much more. Friendly staff to help with your search at King Garden, St. Thomas, and Lola's Christ Church. Williams Metals, we got.
Okay. Brass Tacks, we're back to Brass Tacks Sunday, where we're discussing the social and psychological impacts of COVID. We just take a couple of calls before we go to Nicola. For so far, we've done a lot of theorizing and principles and psychology and sociology. This time, we're going to, after a couple of calls, we go to Nicola, who as an ex-patient of COVID, or who herself to tell, who's walked the walk, talked the talk, and has really experienced it herself. Can we take a call, please, Brass Tacks?
Good morning.
Brass Tacks, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Mr. Murray?
Brass Tacks, are you there? Yeah, good morning. Yes.
And distinguished guests, good morning.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, I just want to let the moderator know that if at any time I sound ungrateful or unsympathetic to what's going on now in this country, that he would cut me off. Okay? But I am calling regarding the COVID hotline. I believe we discussed a bit about anxiety and stuff like that. People hearing the results is going to be a wonderful relief to many families. And I know that, of course, volunteerism is not dead in this country. Our Prime Minister has promised us an additional, I believe, 10 phone lines for the COVID hotline. But I've tried all morning to call the COVID hotline to ask about my own family's results. And it's impossible to get anyone on the phone. What do you say to that?
Dr. Degia, would you think that this inability to get your communications, to get your results, would contribute to social anxiety and even individual anxiety? How do you think that's a phenomenon that we have to deal with?
Yes, caller. I agree that the inability to get your results in whatever stated time definitely would lead to a lot of personal anxiety and social as well, because don't forget that the persons in your family members, even your work colleagues and so on, know they possibly might be at risk. So they also will be feeling anxious. So yes, definite social anxiety. Definitely.
Thank you. All right, thank you, caller. I hope that helps you. Can we take another call, please? And then we go to Nicola. Brastax, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Marie.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
And good morning to you. Fine, thank you. And Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, ma'am.
And, yes, and good morning to your guests, your doctors on the show.
Good morning.
I heard Miss Dr. Ford said the numbers going down. Yes, the numbers might be going down. That is because
you mean you mean Dr. Corey Ford for the Ministry of Health and not Dr. Ford from this panel.
Okay. But I hear Dr. Ford on this panel say that the numbers trickling down. That was here she said this morning.
Yes, I did.
I might be wrong. Yes.
Okay.
But that is because the UK are locked down. Okay, my question now. You hear people released from isolation, right? And gone home. I want to know, what are the long-term effects on person with COVID or asymptomatic? For example, do they have problem with their lungs? Do they have brain? Do they have heart problems? What do they develop after they're released from the hospital, from the isolation? And they want to know if doctors do follow up on them when they're released to check on them to see if their organs are working properly. That's my question.